Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:55 British Summer Time. Today is September 7th, and today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it's been characterized by two very large events. The first, of course, is that the ECB decided that it was going to follow through on its commitment and announced that it was prepared to buy Spanish and Italian bonds, and that has had a profound effect on risk assets. And this morning in China, then the government announced that it was going to accelerate its development of a number of infrastructure projects, and that was gratefully received by the stock market, which is heavily weighted by the industrials and materials sectors. And there was a considerable rally in that market. The Hang Seng as well was up by 3%. So when we think about how this market is going to be affected, or how risk assets are going to be affected generally, it probably is worth spending some time and thinking about the structure of the market and how it has been affected over the last 3 or 4 years. When we compare the rally that has been in evidence for over the last 3 years on the S&P versus what occurred between 2003 and 2007 or 2008, then we're presented with two relatively equal-sized advances, but two very different manners in which that advance has occurred. In the early part of the decade, we were presented with a relatively consistent advance, which found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on consecutive occasions. And from 2009 until now, we've been presented with an entirely different scenario. One of the defining characteristics of the advance has been the persistence of the portions of this uptrend when they have advanced. Not only have they gone up, but they've gone up by a lot, and they go up for longer than many people expect. And they've been driven almost entirely by liquidity provision. And each of the important rallies that we've had since 2009 can be traced back to one central bank or another increasing the supply of money. There's a Deutsche Bank statistic that Thorsten Slok came out with probably 6 months ago, and it was that a number of central banks, when the amount of money that they had added to the system was aggregated, it came to approximately 7 trillion. And a large number of that has been plowed into the fixed income markets. So when we go back and look at what's been happening in stock markets, the risk assets have generally done phenomenally well when liquidity is added to the system, and not so well when it gets removed. The other defining characteristic of this advance has been the increase in volatility and the persistence with which and the speed with which these markets fall when they start to lose their uptrend consistency. And that can be explained both by the massive increase in the supply of money, not only from the Fed or from the ECB, but from just about all major central banks, and the proliferation of high-frequency trading. With the ECB's action and the Bank of China's action, and following on from Ben Bernanke's talk last Friday, where the Fed basically said that it was prepared to do what was necessary to support the US economy, it wasn't going to be the first central bank to announce a fresh bout of quantitative easing, but it waited to see what the ECB was going to do, and now the Bank of China, and if the Fed needs to, it will engage in a fresh round of quantitative easing. And that strategy is being pursued by just about all central banks, because central banking 101, their job is to ensure that there is enough money in the system to accommodate growth. And they feel that they have a free hand to add as much liquidity as is needed because the velocity of money has been deteriorating at an accelerating rate for the last decade in the US. And as long as the velocity of money is deteriorating, then the increase in the supply of money cannot have an inflationary outcome. But what it is having is an outsized effect on risk assets, because in a capitalist system, money will flow to the most productive asset. And at the current time, that is in stock markets and that's in commodities. If we look at the repercussions of what has happened in the last week on stock markets, then the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the DAX, the Swiss Market Index, and the Dutch AEX have all moved to new highs for the year. The FTSE 100 and the ASX and the Hang Seng have reaffirmed their progressions of higher reaction lows that have been evident since June. And that is all positive for stock markets. The Mexican index and the South African index have found support in the region of the 200-day moving average and improved from there. The mainland Chinese market has found at least short-term support and is challenging its four-month progression of lower rally highs. The Indian market, which is a market where investors have been expressing a great deal of anxiety, rallied impressively today and reaffirmed its progression of higher reaction lows. The ASEAN region continues to represent a leadership position, and a number of those markets are really quite close to posting new highs once more. The industrial metal complex, which has been so beaten down, has found at least short-term support, and a number of those metals extended their advances into the end of the week. And the industrial metal complex, in terms of the miners, also found support this week. Rio Tinto posted an upside weekly key reversal. BHP reaffirmed its progression of higher reaction lows and rallied very impressively today and yesterday. The industrial complex generally has been an underperformer for a year. But that is beginning to change, and we're starting to see that the industrial complex, whether it is straight industrials like Siemens or General Electric, which hit a new four-year high in here today, and has all the characteristics of a share that is breaking out of its base, then we're starting to see that chemical companies, industrials, engineering companies are moving to positions of outperformance following a year of underperformance, and they represent an underowned asset class. So there is ample opportunity in stock markets to benefit from this increase in the supply of money. Nothing has changed to the structure of the market over the last couple of months to question the outlook for what is likely to happen with stock markets, and that is that this rally will continue and be persistent for as long as new money is added to the system. And when that money is starting, when the flow of that cash ebbs and some of it starts to be withdrawn, then we'll be set up for another one of these sharp pullbacks, which will probably take us back to testing the three-year progression of higher reaction lows. So we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside in the short term. When we look at what's happening in government bonds, of the $8 trillion that has been created since 2007, a great deal of it has flowed into government bonds, and particularly those of the USA, Germany, a number of the creditor nations within the Eurozone and Japan. Now, one of the clear characteristics that's associated with absolutely every major bubble is that at the top of the market, supply explodes. And that is no less the case in government bonds as it is in any other market. And when we look at those markets on a total return basis, they represent one of the most consistent advances of any asset classes ever. The Merrill Lynch 10-year plus total return index for Treasury futures has had a progression of higher reaction lows for almost 30 years and has found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on consecutive occasions. It makes it an incredibly easy chart to monitor because when it loses that uptrend consistency, when it breaks its progression of higher reaction lows, when it sustains a move below the 200-day MA, well, then the market will have peaked and the bull market will be over and we will be presented with a new bear market and interest rates will rise. One of the other massive characteristics of a bubble is that regardless of how much supply increases, demand keeps pace for a good portion of that time and investors fall over themselves to invest and to give their money to whoever is increasing supply. And that's exactly what is happening. But we're in the latter stages of this move following a 30-year advance. Because real interest rates are negative. And from the perspective of an investor, the whole reason that fixed income exists is for yield. And in a negative real yield environment, then investors have very little chance of maintaining their purchasing power when they engage in the market at such remarkably low yields. And that does suggest that what is really characterizing this market has been momentum. And regardless of whether investors identify their strategy as a momentum trade or not, this is a trading strategy, not an investment strategy. And when the support for momentum in the market is withdrawn, then yields will rise. It is interesting that US Treasuries, which rallied just about all of last week, pulled back sharply in the last couple of days. They're back below 150 again. Bunds have pulled back to 140. And because the majority of the buying is going to occur at the short end of the curve, that is where we've had the greatest move in terms of yields falling for the periphery and rising for the core in the Eurozone. When one looks at the Spanish 10-year bond yield on an absolute basis over at least 20 years, we can see that the 8-year base was completed in 2010. A first step above the base was completed in March, April of this year. And yields would have gone substantially higher if we had not seen an intervention by the ECB. We did see an intervention, and from October of last year, the real question as to whether the ECB was willing to act as a lender of last resort was taken off the table. In return for its actions as a lender of last resort, the ECB demanded that steps be taken towards further fiscal cohesion within the Eurozone and some proxy of a United States of Europe. And in June, the majority of European finance ministers agreed to that process. They said that they would come up with a blueprint for how that would be achieved. And how that is going to happen is going to be ironed out in the next few months. In the meantime, the existential threat to the euro has been removed. So not only are we getting a rally that is represented by an increase in liquidity, but we're also getting a lowering of the risk premium that has been attached to the Eurozone. So yesterday I posted a considerable number of European bank charts that have base formation characteristics and are at the upper side of their respective bases. The European banking sector has rallied impressively over the last couple of days. The US banking sector is breaking up out of a four-year base. And the fact that GE is doing the same thing is probably reflective both of its status as one of the biggest financials in the world, as well as its status as being one of the biggest industrials. But when we start to see base formation completion in the financial sector, then that is something that makes us sit up and pay attention. Banks as liquidity providers thrive in a liquidity-rich environment. And it would be a real warning if banks were not responding to the amount of liquidity that is being provided. If we take a big step back and we look at where we are in terms of major bull and bear markets, then US Treasuries and European core sovereign bonds represent a true bubble, which has yet to pop. Because of the supply of money that is being pumped into the market, and in a capitalist system, that money flowing to the most productive assets, there is an obvious allure for assets that the supply of cannot simply be increased. And gold has rallied by almost $100 since the beginning of September. It's back up to $1,735. It shows every characteristic that we are back into an accumulation phase rather than a distribution phase for gold. While there is potential, it will encounter a little bit of resistance in the region of $1,800, and it is a little bit overbought in the short term. Nothing has occurred to question potential that it will eventually push through $1,800 and then through $1,900 and push on to new high ground. Gold represents a major bull market which could potentially end in a bubble. It's put in a positive performance for each one of the last 10 years. And when it stops doing that, that's going to be a major warning that something has changed in the market. When gold starts to break down and sustain moves below its MA, then that's also going to be a warning. And when it pushes back into underlying trading ranges, then we'll probably have evidence that there's a top. And one of the other easy barometers to monitor for gold is the holdings of ETFs. And it is interesting that they have been represented one of the most consistent trends over the last 5 years. And the holdings at gold ETFs moved to new highs last week, well in advance of this substantial rally that we've had in gold since then. And with gold rallying, that acts as a tailwind to the other precious metals and the gold shares. What we are seeing over the last couple of days is that the underowned asset classes are turning to positions of outperformance. So underowned asset classes have been gold shares, which really fell very aggressively in March, April of this year, and have now bottomed and look like they're going higher. The industrial metal complex, which has been trending lower for much of the last year, has found at least short-term, probably medium-term support, and looks like it's going higher from here. The industrial metal miners, with BHP Billiton forming an upside key reversal, No, sorry, Rio Tinto farming an upside key reversal this week in BHP Billiton, reaffirming its progression of higher reaction lows. And the BlackRock World Mining Trust finding support this week, rallying impressively and challenging the progression of lower rally highs. The industrials sector, GE breaking upwards, US banks breaking upwards, and the European banking sector with a number of Europe's banks showing base formation characteristics. The Irish market, which has been ranging for the last 4 years, looks more likely than not that it will complete its base in the near term. We're seeing an increasing number of these markets pushing on to new highs for the year. And they're responding to this liquidity provision. When we look at these cycles again, then for the majority of equities, we've been in this range-bound environment for the last 10 years, 12 years for a number of markets. And this ranging is characteristic of indecision, and indecision does nothing for confidence. And the increased volatility we've had in the last 3 years has fostered an opinion that it will always be this way and that it is just something we have to get used to. Whereas that is also symptomatic of this ranging environment, because ranges are generally associated with expectations deteriorating. And we've characterized the range on Wall Street for the last decade as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. So while expectations have gone down and prices have generally gone sideways, valuations have improved substantially. And there is a significant cohort of globally oriented companies that have strong balance sheets which are breaking upwards to new all-time highs. And they are doing that for a reason. One of the big reasons is that they are leveraged to the greatest urbanization in history. We're living in the biggest era of humanism that there is ever likely to be. Hundreds of millions of people being lifted out of poverty and into the disposable income classes. And that is creating new markets for well-established companies where it has been a long time since they were characterized as growth companies. But that is exactly what we are seeing. And it is a very interesting contrast when we compare the condition of high-class equities and well-run, strong balance sheet companies with sovereign bonds, because equities currently yield more than bonds and substantially more than treasuries in some cases. And that was always the case before the late 1950s. And the reason for it was because there was a greater perception of risk in the equity market and investors felt that they had to be compensated for it. But we're in the exact opposite position now, where investors are willing to take any risk to own treasuries, and that is where the greatest risk lies, because of the problems of unfunded liabilities, not just with the USA, but with a lot of other countries, and because of the bubble characteristics, investors are falling over themselves to increase their positions in bonds. And when a government needs to borrow that badly, do we really need to lend? And exactly the opposite is happening in equities. Because what's happening in equities is that valuations have improved, dividends have rose, yields have gone higher, and the only people that are taking overweight positions in these companies are either those who have really long-term vision, but the most notable participants are the companies themselves. The number of share buybacks has increased substantially in the last number of years. And when a company like Siemens can borrow in the bond market at 2.3% over 7 years instead of paying out a dividend of over 4%, well, then it's just simple balance sheet optimization when they decide that that is what they're going to do and they start buying back their shares. So in the bond market, we see a situation where the supply is exploding. And in the equity markets, we see a situation where the supply of high-quality equities is declining. And that is the condition that promotes a bull market. Because there is ample opportunity for yield compression in some of these equities. And they represent not only an undervalued asset class, but an under-owned asset class. And if bonds are the bubble that is yet to pop, and precious metals are the bull market that could finally end in a bubble, then high quality equities are the new bull market, which is really only beginning to get started. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.